it's a fun subject.
Off you go.
Thank you. Okay. Well, good evening, everybody. Please be aware that this smorgasbord contains 1970s non-politically correct language and religious references. Now, this isn't Oh, What a Lovely War, all fun and games and jollity on the pier, before it descends into one of the circles of hell that Dante didn't foresee, industrial warfare and life in the trenches, or perhaps it is. Marmalade, not the stuff you put on toast, the Marmalade, Scottish pop group. They sang Changes. The world is a bad place, a bad place, a terrible place to live. Oh, but I don't want to die. Yes? No? At the beginning of Stanley Kubrick's film, 2001, A Space Odyssey, groups of apes are seen in competition with each other for scarce resources. Accidentally, one ape from one group discovers that a big bone wielded with force makes a weapon capable of hurting other apes. Armed, the newly powerful group annihilates the other. The rest, as they say, is history. On the subject of films, in They Live, the protagonist discovers through special sunglasses that the ruling class are aliens who are concealing their appearances and manipulating people to consume, breed, and conform to the status quo via subliminal messages in mass media. Art imitating life? Carl von Clausewitz said, war is a continuation of policy with other means or by other means. And war is an act of violence intended to compel our opponent to fulfill our will. American capitalism especially has refined that particular policy down to the 5.56 mil degree. What are the possible causes of war? Economic gain, Lebensraum, territorial, religion, nationalism, revolutionary, throwing off the colonial yoke, defensive, but mainly the capitalist system. In 1935, Major General Smedley Darlington Butler, an American who had taken part in many military campaigns, had an epiphany. He spilt the beans, listing the various countries he had worked in and the capitalists whose interest the military was working for. Oil, banks, Wall Street, food companies. Quote, I spent 33 years and 4 months in active military service. And during that period, I spent most of my time as a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street and the bankers. In short, I was a racketeer, a gangster for capitalism. Looking back on it, I might have given Al Capone a few hints. The best he could do was to operate his racket in three districts. I operated on three continents, unquote. A fuller account of the Major General can be found in the 1970 party pamphlet, The Socialist Party and War. Enough of the frivolous stuff. Let's move on to the frivolous nuclear obliteration. In the mid-60s, Barry Maguire was growling, we're on the eve of destruction, but you don't believe it, written by P.F. Sloan. Up to a point, Lord Copper, because we've been on the eve ever since the first atomic bomb, which was American-produced and was exploded in Japan in 1945, twice. A Barry Maguire featured in the Mamas and Papas song Creek Alley. Chances of the working class getting fat in 2023 strike me as quite slim. William Burroughs, author of Naked Lunch, allegedly said, no one owns life, but anybody who can lift a frying pan owns death. Now, any state or determined group that has nuclear weapons and the means to deliver them to various targets owns death wholesale. J. Robert Oppenheimer wasn't joking when he quoted from the Bhagavad Gita, now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds. Whatever you say about religious fiction, when it comes to death, destruction, and the end of the world stuff, believers' Bibles have a very poetic turn of phrase to encompass it. The Polar DEW has just warned that a nuclear rocket strike of at least 1,000 megatons has been launched by the enemy directly at our major cities. This announcement will take 2.25 minutes to make. You therefore have a further 8.25 minutes to comply with the shelter requirements published in the Civil Defence Code section Atomic Attack. DW means distant early warning. Donovan gave us a taster in his song, The War Drags On. Last night, poor Dan had a nightmare, it seems. One kept occurring, reoccurring in his dreams. Cities full of people, burning, screaming, shouting loud. And right overhead, a great orange mushroom cloud. Now, there's no more war, for there's no more world. On a Saturday in January 2018, anyone with a Hawaiian telephone number received this message. Ballistic missile threat inbound to Hawaii. Seek immediate shelter. This is not a drill. Spoiler alert, it was. The text had been sent accidentally. Nuclearomitiophobia is anxiety or phobia in the face of a potential future nuclear holocaust. I've got a number of phobias. This is one of the worst. Are there any heavy metal fans here tonight? 2 Minutes to Midnight by Iron Maiden. As the madmen play on words and make us all dance to their song, to the tune of starving millions to make a better kind of gun. Not being a heavy metal fan, I only just discovered that Black Sabbath also had an anti-war song. Politicians hide themselves away. They only started the war. Why should they go out to fight? They leave that role to the poor. Yeah? Ozzy Osbourne, Sabbath's lead vocalist, was from Birmingham. Here's more about Birmingham. The SS-17 missile detonated its nuclear warhead at 3,500 metres above Winston Green Prison at 10:30 hours on the morning of August 20th. Within a fraction of a second, the resulting fireball, with temperatures approaching those of the sun, was over 2,000 metres in diameter and reached down towards the centre of Birmingham. The incredibly brilliant flash which accompanied the detonation was visible in London. The enormous blast pressure released by the nuclear device followed the heat wave within a matter of seconds. Within 3 kilometres of Winston Green, nothing survived. The air was full of flying objects picked up by winds moving outwards, which, even at ranges of 4 to 5 kilometres, approached 500 kilometres an hour. The enormous mushroom cloud above the totally devastated centre of Birmingham had risen to a height of 15 kilometres and had spread across a diameter of approximately 20 kilometres. There were fires in towns as far away as Wolverhampton, Stourbridge, Halesowen, Solihull, Sutton Coldfield, Warsaw and Brownhills. That adds another dimension to the Black Country, black by day and red by night. That was taken from the Third World War, August 1985, A Future History. That was published in 1978. To borrow from Charles Dickens, always worth borrowing for, Scrooge asked the ghost of the future, are these the shadows of the things that will be, or are they shadows of things that may be only? Response, men's courses will foreshadow certain ends, to which, if persevered in, they must lead. Up until January 24, 2023, the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists Doomsday Clock stood at 100 seconds to midnight. On that date, it was changed to 90 seconds to midnight. Here is a Pete Seeger song dedicated to all those who unthinkingly support the current thing. What did you learn in school today? I learned our government must be strong. It's always right and never wrong. Our leaders are the finest men, and we elect them again and again. War is not so bad. I learned about the great ones we have had. We fought in Germany and in France, and someday I might get my chance. And that's what I learned in school today. Pete Seeger's half-sister, Peggy Seeger, married Ewan McColl, real name James Henry Miller. McColl was a member of the Communist Party of Great Britain. But if you like his music, that shouldn't be held against him. His third wife, Margaret Peggy Seeger, was also, besides being a folk singer, very political. She wrote Carry Greenham Home for the Greenham Common Women's Peace Camp. Ewan McColl's first wife was Joan Littlewood, who produced the theatre version of Oh, What a Lovely War. Ewan McColl's second marriage gave us the wonderful Kirsty McColl, and I sincerely hope you're familiar with Kirsty, who is sadly no longer with us. Greenham Common Peace Camp, 1981 to 2000, established in protest against allowing American cruise missiles to be sighted there. Clifford Slapper gave the Greenham women a bit of a kicking. Quote, "Unfortunately, as with C&D in general, there is a smug self-righteousness about the women at Greenham Common. You don't know or don't care that socialists alone have opposed every single war this century, not just before they began, but during and after them too, even where this meant incarceration in prison for many of our members during both world wars. We do not sneer at the opposition to war of millions of our fellow workers, but how is this opposition to be turned into a practical movement which will be effective in ending all war?" Unquote. That was in the Socialist Standard, July 1984. Steve Coleman also exercised his Doc Martens on Greenham. Quote, "The women of Greenham Common have won sympathy from some workers attracted to the simple emotional appeal of women who do not want to be destroyed in the Holocaust. There are many workers who are unable to relate to the ritualistic displays exhibited by the Greenham reformists, preferring to be convinced by logical argument rather than old Welsh folk songs and wild animalistic noises. It is unpopular to go against the tide of radical support for reform campaigns such as that at Greenham Common. In doing so, socialists are always open to the accusation that we are no different from the Tories," unquote. Socialist Standard, June 1984. What I wonder would have been the attitude of women Greenham demonstrators to transitioning male to females trying to live among them. Would the Greenham women have been designated TERFs, trans-exclusionary radical feminists, if they had been unaccepting of women-only spaces being violated? Do sexual politics matter when you're trying not to be incinerated? Not trying to do a Ricky Gervais here, you know, ooh, controversial. Val McDermid, Scottish writer, wrote crime novels back in the 80s featuring lesbian journalist Lindsay Gordon, one of which was Common Murder, a fictionalised account of Greenham. The series contains some excellent social comment on that period, and her novels offer great insight into lesbian relationships, whatever your sexual orientation. War. I despise it. It means destruction of innocent lives. War means tears to thousands of mothers' eyes when their sons go off to fight and lose their lives. It's an enemy to all mankind. It's got one friend, that's the Undertaker. War has shattered many a young man's dreams. It's made him disabled, bitter, and mean. Life is much too short and precious to spend fighting wars each day. We can't give life, it can only take it away. Peace, love, and understanding. Tell me, is there no place for them today? They say we must fight to keep our freedoms, but there's got to be a better way. War, what is it good for? You tell me, nothing. Stand up and shout it, nothing. Edwin Starr. There's got to be a better way. Of course there's an expletive-deleted better way. In August 1914, the SPGB Executive Committee said, having no quarrel with the working class of any country, we extend to our fellow workers of all lands the expression of our goodwill and socialist fraternity, and pledge ourselves to work for the overthrow of capitalism and the triumph of socialism, the world for the workers. This is not a position that the Labour Party holds or has ever held. Perhaps someone should ask Keir Starmer if he's prepared to push the button. 2 days ago, Starmer tweeted, Labour had moved from a party of dogma to a party of patriotism. West Midlands branch responded with Samuel Johnson's statement, patriotism is the last refuge of the scoundrel. Obviously, the Executive Committee's words remain 100% still relevant, but who's taking any notice? In the pessimistic words of Don McLean's dedication to an artist, they would not listen, they're not listening still. Perhaps they never will. Do not take well-loved pets, including birds, into your shelter. They will consume fresh air. Leave the old and bedridden. You can do nothing for them. Remember to press the ceiling switch when everyone is in the shelter. Set the radiation aerial. Turn on the Geiger barometer. The Home Office recently issued war plans to local authorities, announcing that Britain would be put on a 48-hour war alert. We must be prepared for the possibility of hostilities occurring at short notice. For planning purposes, it should be assumed that there may be as little as 7 days' warning of attack. The Prime Minister opening Britain's most advanced torpedo factory said that such weapons of destruction would serve to defend the British way of life. Must be true, as Pete Seeger already pointed out, the government wouldn't lie. Question. What is the British way of life? Today, institutions fundamental to the British system of government are under attack. The public schools, the House of Lords, the Church of England, the holy institution of marriage, even our magnificent police force are no longer safe from those who would undermine our society. And it's about time we said enough is enough, and saw a return to the traditional British values of discipline, obedience, morality, and freedom. What we want is freedom from the Reds and the Blacks and the criminals, prostitutes, pansies and punks, football hooligans, juvenile delinquents, lesbians and left-wing scum, freedom from the niggers and the packies and the unions, freedom from the gypsies and the Jews, freedom from left-wing layabouts and liberals, freedom from the likes of you. James Callaghan was Prime Minister of a Labour government in 1978 when that was issued. The risk of nuclear conflict remains remote, but the threats are increasing. That is why we must be able to deter the most extreme acts of aggression against us and our NATO allies. Deterrence plays a key role in keeping the public safe, and to abandon our nuclear deterrent would put us all at greater risk. We are deliberately ambiguous about precisely when, how, and at what scale we would use our weapons. The UK's nuclear deterrent is operationally independent. Only the Prime Minister can authorise the use of our nuclear weapons, even if deployed as part of a NATO response. We would consider using our nuclear weapons only in extreme circumstances of self-defence, including the defence of our NATO allies. Nuclear weapons can be categorised as strategic, intercontinental ballistic missiles, theatre, non-strategic nuclear weapons, or tactical. When you think about the Charlies and Charlottes who have filled the PM position recently, I don't think that inspires much confidence, do you? Threats, Russia, China, somebody else. But would they use our weapons if NATO was the aggressor, which a lot of Russians and non-Russians now think they are? The first quote I used was taken from the 1982 party pamphlet, Is a Third World War Inevitable? 41 years on, I think 7 days warning of attack is optimistic. The PM who spoke of defending the British way of life was Margaret Thatcher. The latter stuff is from the gov.uk site. From the NATO website, nuclear weapons are a core component of NATO's overall capabilities for deterrence and defence, alongside conventional and missile defence forces. NATO is committed to arms control, disarmament and non-proliferation. But as long as nuclear weapons exist, it will remain a nuclear alliance. If they ever start shoving copies of Protect and Survive through the letterbox again, then it's time to panic, Mr. Mannering, because you know the brown stuff is going to be hitting the fan very soon. Do not break the inside airlock seals until the radiation all clear shows. Watch for the cuckoo in your Perspex panel or your district touring doctor rings your bell. If before this your air becomes exhausted or if any of your family is critically injured, administer the capsules marked Valley Forge, red pockets in number one survival kit for painless death. The Russian-Ukrainian conflict started on the 24th of February, 2022. So it's basically 12 months old. This evening's miscellany was written weeks ago, but it was taken for granted then that this particular conflict would still be happening come February 23 and may very well continue throughout the rest of the year and possibly beyond. I take it that none of us here tonight will be banging saucepan lids or whatever it is the British Prime Minister wants us to do to show our support for the current thing. I believe that originally the Russians said it would all be over in a matter of a few weeks. That's what they thought in August 1914. Spoiler alert, it wasn't all over by Christmas 1914. In 1915, there was a Christmas truce in the trenches instigated by the poor bloody infantry. All brothers hand in hand in 19 and 15 in no man's land. And in the morning, all the guns boomed in the rain. And we killed them and they killed us again. At night, they charged. We fought them hand to hand. And I killed the boy that sang in no man's land. Now, just because we're socialists, it doesn't mean that we have to agree on absolutely everything, does it? But saying that war is bad is so bloody obvious that no reasonable, fair-minded, intelligent person, irrespective of their gender, could disagree with that, could they? It's like socialism. No reasonable, fair-minded, intelligent person could disagree with that, could they? Dulce et decorum est pro patria mori. It is sweet and fitting to die for one's country. The Latin is taken from an ode by the Roman Horace. What a load of men's testicles. If you could hear at every jolt the blood come gargling from the froth-corrupted lungs, obscene as cancer, bitter as the cud, of vile, incurable sores on innocent tongues, my friend, you would not sell with such high zest to children ardent for some desperate glory, the old bligh, dulce et decorum et pro patria mori, William Owen, 1920. Quel surprise, or mange tout, as Del Boy would say. There are lots of people who would agree with Horace. Dulce et decorum et pro patria mori. It is sweet and fitting to die for one's country. Really? Well, who, for example? Biden, Zelensky, Putin, whoever happened to be British Prime Minister at the time of this talk, the military-industrial complex of any state, just as long as they are not the ones doing the fighting and dying, mind, arms dealers, arms manufacturers. Frankie Goes to Hollywood's When Two Tribes Go to War official video had it right. Let the leaders fight it out amongst themselves. Reagan and Chernenko featured in the video. Who would we like to see go hand to hand in a remake? There ain't half been some Larry leaders, shady scoundrels, stupid scumbags. There ain't half been some lousy leaders, rotten rascals, vicious villains. Are you a blockhead? No. Then why let yourself be led by the nose and suppose that those who smirk and lie and narcissism personify know what's best for thee and me? A leader's decree might suit the cowardly petty bourgeoisie, but dialectic materialism should teach us that we do not bend the knee for any Joe, Rishi or Henri calling themselves leaders, but who are really silly bleeders. So keep your chauvinism, dogmatism, your elitism, extremism, take your fascism and totalitarianism and put them you know where, for we're for socialism. We are many and they are few. Ian Drury inspired me to write that. Twitter objected to my language when I posted this in response to Zelensky coming down hard on workers' rights. It's estimated there are approximately 13,080 nuclear warheads in the world today. And while this is far fewer than either the US or Russia possessed during their Cold War peak, there are more countries now with nuclear weapons than there were 30 or 40 years ago. At present, Russia has got the higher number of nuclear weapons with over 6,000 total warheads. The United States follows closely behind with 5,550 total nuclear weapons. I've heard of overkill, but for Christ's sake, that's just ridiculous. The strategic thinking behind this is mad. Mutual assured destruction. Mad? It's bloody insane. If you're familiar with George Bernard Shaw's play, Major Barbara, which I'm sure you are because you're all such intelligent, well-read people, she's in the Salvation Army. Her estranged father is an arms manufacturer. Here he describes the satisfaction he gains from his chosen profession. Undershaft, here I am, a manufacturer of mutilation and murder. I find myself in especially amiable humour just now because this morning, down at the foundry, we blew 27 dummy soldiers into fragments with a gun which formerly destroyed only 13. Lomax, well, the more destructive war becomes, the sooner it will be abolished, eh? Undershaft, not at all. The more destructive war becomes, the more fascinating we find it. All the spare money my trade rivals spend on hospitals, cathedrals and other receptacles for conscience money, I devote to experiments and researches in improved methods of destroying life and property. I have always done so and I always shall. Therefore, your Christmas card moralities of peace on earth and goodwill among men are no use to me. My morality, my religion, must have a place for cannons and torpedoes in it. It's not all bad war, right? What about the war on want, the war on drugs, the war on terror, the war on poverty, the war on slavery, the war on crime, the war on want? Some cynic wrote in the Urban Dictionary, the first two words of anything the American government wants to eradicate but knows the population won't back, unless it sounds important, so it becomes a war on X. Some people think that the world is flat. Some people think that we're living in a computer-generated reality, a bit like that film, The Matrix. The Socialist Party of Great Britain, red-pilling society since 1904. Some people think capitalism is great. Some people believe in UFOs and think that aliens are living amongst us. Then there's David Icke. Or perhaps we're living in a lunatic asylum. Who's running it? The inmates? No, the Nurse Mildred Ratched types are in charge. Risk is a strategy board game. The board depicts a world map, 42 territories. Players make and end alliances. The goal is to occupy every territory on the board and eliminate the other players. Russia's divided into five territories, but Ukraine's huge in comparison. I don't know the significance of that. In the way that life's not a rehearsal, the risk that capitalism is now playing is not a game because it has unutterable consequences for all of us. Brigadier General Ripper is an unhinged United States Air Force general who orders a preemptive nuclear attack on the Soviet Union in Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb, in Stanley Kubrick's 1964 film. How many Brigadier General Jack D. Rippers are there in the US military or the State Department or the White House in the present day? Bob Dylan's equality-minded deity has been claimed in a conflict to support both sides. American evangelism contains many who would have no qualms in precipitating Armageddon because it expedites the rapture when they believe they will be taken up to heaven. That's a dangerous belief. Rather than their supernatural being stopping the next war, it is more likely to be used as a justification for one. The United States seems to me to be more dangerous and provocative in its general military and diplomatic strategies, which press around the Soviet Union with menacing bases. E.P. Thompson, 1980, obviously since then has been a lot more pressing. In the late 60s, J.G. Ballard wrote The Killing Ground, in which the United States is at war with any number of countries, including Britain. Quote, even with 20 million men under arms, the Americans could spare fewer than 200,000 soldiers for the British Isles, a remote backwater in their global war against dozens of national liberation armies, unquote. Science fiction writers have always been very present. This announcement is ending. Our president has already given orders for massive retaliation. It will be decisive. Some of us may die. Remember, statistically, it is not likely to be you. All flags are flying fully dressed on government buildings. The sun is shining. Death is the least we have to fear. We are all in the hands of God. Whatever happens by his will, whatever happens, happens by his will. Now go quickly to your shelters. Acknowledgements to Peter Porter for the poem. Your attention, please. Thank you for listening.